Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council regular work session this Tuesday, July 8th at 7 a.m. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus?
Here.
Mr. Cleworth?
Here.
Ms. Therrien?
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Here.
Ms. Tidwell?
Here.
Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstad?
Here.
Okay, first up is Ordinance 6316, an ordinance establishing a paramedic recruitment bonus program introduced by myself. It's coming up for a second reading next Monday. Pretty self-explanatory. Chief, you want to come up? How many paramedics do we have right now?
Right now we have about 17.
Okay. And we try and have a paramedic on every shift on every unit of
our goal is to have a paramedic on every ambulance, yes.
Okay. And how are we doing with that right now?
We make it work right now, but as we look into the future with promotions and, you know, potential people leaving, this is to help reaffirm our paramedic firefighter ranks, which is where we need the majority of our paramedics to work. And as I said last time, over the course of the years, a lot of our paramedics have promoted up, as they should over time. And now we're just trying to fill that paramedic void at the firefighter level. This is an excellent program that I think will help that in the future.
Would you know the percentage of paramedics that have been promoted up versus those who have come in as paramedics?
Not right off. I'd have to go back into the history books to see that. But we've promoted almost the majority of our paramedic staff. Each shift right now has 1 to 2 firefighter medics, and we'd love to see that to be at least double that.
Margarita, how much money do we have in the budget right now for sending paramedics out to training each year?
The amount that we have budgeted for the firefighter for training, we budgeted $75,000 this year.
This year. Mm-hmm. Have we used any of that money as yet?
Yes, we have used some of the funds, and in the last budget amendment, we've added funds to that area for training.
Okay. And so we're looking at providing $20,000 per recruitment bonus. Chief, how many would you expect would be available this year to come in from a different location and receive the bonus?
We're hoping with this bonus and some of the other internal changes that we've worked on to make our culture and our environment better for everyone, we're hoping to get at least 4 to 5 new paramedics in this next hiring batch that Jake and his crowd has worked very hard on to get posted for us here in the last about week or so.
Margarita, what are we at salary savings of the fire department right now? Would you know that amount?
I'm projecting $400,000 by the end of the year if overtime maintains the same level.
That's quite a statement. Yeah. Questions for the chief or Margarita, counsel? Mr. Cleworth and Ms. Sprinkle.
Yeah, chief, thank you for the number. Did you get a number for the advanced EMTs also?
I do. I left it on my desk, and I apologize for that, but I can send that out. But those other varying EMTs fill up the rest of our ranks.
Of the 17 paramedics.
Or Margarita can just hand me the numbers because she has my back. So.
That's why she's Margarita.
I'm sorry I asked the wrong person.
I had it, Mr. Cleworth. I promise. It's just on my desk with all the other things I forgot this morning. So it looks like we have 11 advanced EMTs, 13 EMTs, and we do have a couple of EMT2s, and we have 2 EMT3s, but that's not something that we track on the payroll side because those other levels don't get paid differently. So the 3 levels we pay for are EMT advanced and then paramedic.
Of the 17 paramedics, how many actually can you use or staff? On each shift, we have 3 shifts. We're running 3 ambulances, hopefully, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So we need 3 paramedics, I guess.
That's the minimum.
On a shift. And so times 3, that'd be 9 that we need to cover it. And then when in their absence, we need somebody to cover that.
Correct.
How many of those 17 can we not use?
In theory, they all could be used, but as they move up, if you move them into a firefighter rank, like if you have a battalion chief paramedic and that battalion chief paramedic works a firefighter paramedic spot, then that is your highest cost per hour of overtime possible. And then if you force that with that 2.1 multiplier, that's even more expensive. Where the goal, I think, for the council and myself is to reduce that number to the lowest per hour cost. And the way to do that is to have equal rank people filling equal ranks, which is why the council made a great move earlier by adding that fourth captain. That means the captains are working that captain level work and not a battalion chief coming down. And we've seen the effects of that already, albeit smaller than, you know, the mass picture that works. So what we don't want is to have captain paramedics working as firefighters, engineer, driver, paramedics working as firefighters as much as possible. So as you noted, we need three per day, but that's if no one is off or injured. So we want to have a few more firefighter paramedics in the ranks to backfill and also give people the opportunity to have a day off of the ambulance when they are at work. So that way they're not just constantly, you know, getting 48 hours on the ambulance, because that makes for a long day.
So how many of the 17 are captains or battalion chiefs?
So it is on here. Look at that. So we have right now two battalion chiefs, five captains, seven drivers, and the remaining of that number are firefighter paramedics. So there's 14 members who are paramedics who have in the last few years moved out of the firefighter rank, which is excellent. That's what we want. The problem is we have to backfill those, and that's what every agency is trying to work on, is refilling those firefighter ranks with paramedics. And so we're in the same boat.
14 of the 17 have advanced.
Yes. Yeah, over time. And some of those were obviously hired as paramedics. Some of those went through training from the city side and then have been promoted throughout their time with the department.
Are they paid to be a paramedic? Are they a captain or a battalion chief?
So they don't make the pro pay that you see in the budget. They do make a higher hourly rate to maintain their paramedic certification. Even if they're not on the ambulance, them being paramedics is still useful and can be during bad events, but they're not staffing the ambulance primarily. So they're still very valuable. They're just used in a different manner.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle.
So I guess I'm confused only in that we're training people who are very specific to that job. It's expensive. And then we promote them out so they don't do that job anymore. Is that what I'm kind of hearing?
No, kind of, sort of, not specifically, Ms. Sprinkle. So in any department, when you start in as a recruit firefighter or an entry-level police officer or whatever it is, I would assume that most people's career goal is to be promoted, right? To make it to captain or in the police department, a sergeant, lieutenant, whatever it is. This is just normal. What is not normal is the inability to recruit firefighter paramedics. That's why we're trying to stand out from the rest of the crowd. We're fighting a national paramedic shortage. We have a location challenge that we're also trying to overcome, being in the middle of Alaska. And this is a very simple, clean, and easy way to help make us a little bit more attractive to paramedics, not just in the state of Alaska, but probably more nationally than other areas that are not offering something like this currently. And I think this will make a huge difference. So yes, we do have paramedics. We have trained some of those. Some of them have come to us already trained, which is nice. But over time, they promote to do different roles or to, you know, advance their career, which I think is normal for most everybody.
It just seems like we're working against ourselves.
I was originally a little hesitant of this because I thought I couldn't imagine that bonus would make an impact to actually, you know, recruit people that already have that training. But I talked to a few people, and it seems like it actually will. And I think that's pretty exciting that we could spend, you know, $20,000 and potentially save us $136,000. If we could get one, that would be amazing. I'd like to co-sponsor this. I think it's great.
Thank you very much. You know, overall, our job is to make sure we have the best fire department in the interior. And I look at three fire departments that we work with very well with, the university and Fort Wainwright. One is a federal entity, one is a state entity. So we have to look into our toolbox on how to recruit. working with the chief, this is one of the tools of the toolbox we can use. We give bonuses for lateral hires coming in. We give bonuses for police officers going to Sitka. We give bonuses for many other people on the original hire. And the chief came to me with this proposal, and it took me about 3 seconds to say, let's do this. But also, this gives us a time to talk about our fire department overall. Now, you just heard from Margarita Bell that we have right now at this moment $400,000 in salary savings, which will basically pay for this product. That won't be that way in the future because we're in a hiring. So this is a reviewable program. We will see how it works. If it does not work, you will know about it. If it works wildly or if it works at all, it will only help us. Mr. Ringstead.
So let's see if I got this right. We budgeted for 9 extra positions. You've got 4 of them filled. You're trying to fill the other 5. This program's going to cost us 20 grand, potentially, 20 grand per person, so $100,000. And it sunsets in 6 months. So next 6 months, you're hoping the plan is to see if you can get 5 more of our new positions filled with this.
Correct. My goal is to fill those positions with paramedics, if possible, yes. Regardless of that, we will fill those positions. The goal is to fill them with paramedics because of our quality of service, like the mayor just mentioned, and our desire to not only be one of the best, but the best, but provide the highest level of care to our citizens and visitors. So that's the goal. It's a lofty goal. It's hard to recruit paramedics anywhere, but this definitely helps. The mayor's vision to see that, I think, was very helpful, and I appreciate the council's continued support with trying to retain and recruit amazing talent.
Chief, in our last round of hiring, how many applicants did you have?
So total, there were approximately 32 applicants for the 9 positions.
You chose 4 out of 32.
We offered 4 positions. We actually put a 5th in, but he was a lateral from our fire marshal's office. So we had 5 currently graduate the last academy.
So I have to surmise, when you take less than 15% of the applicants, you're looking at the best ones possible for our. And this will give another round with incentive of finding the best ones possible who are already paramedics.
That is 100% correct. We are very fortunate that we can pick from a big group of people to find the best talent available for the city.
Thank you. Any other questions for the chief? Thank you, chief.
Thank you, mayor. Thank you, council.
Thank you.
Next up is ordinance 6317, ordinance amending the general code, chapter 22, elections. So I would like to say Mr. Cleworth, but maybe we should just go directly to Danny. Danny.
Good morning, council. Since you last looked at this, the attorney went through it with a fine-tooth comb, I will say, and made some changes, and those changes are also in your packet. It's shown to you in markup format, so you can see the changes that he made between the last version.
Is that the post-substitute with the red
yes.
changes?
Okay. And Mr. Cleworth was agreeable to those proposed changes. I do have a list of all the changes in the whole 22 pages. I don't know if you want me to go through that or if you just want to ask questions.
Ms. Therrien.
Could you tell us what's different in the amended version?
In the amended version, there's an added definition for an organized group as used in the in sections 2217.2 poll watchers. That's just to say what an organized group is. It defines organized group for when a poll watcher is designated by an organized group to stay at a polling place and watch. In section 229.2, candidate pamphlet, the proposed version adds clarification that candidates can revise their submittals or correct or resubmit rejected information as long as it's prior to the pamphlet deadline. And the other change, and this is like all of the changes except for, you know, shall to will and those. 22-17.2 poll watchers, this codifies the current requirement in our guidelines for poll watchers that they must be U.S. citizens and that they must reside locally. Mr. Cleworth wanted it to say that they must be a Fairbanks Northstar borough resident. And that's the substantive, well, if you want to call those substantive changes in the proposed version, those are it.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Sprinkle.
I know that you brought this to our attention to mimic or make sure it works with the borough's elections. Mm-hmm. So is anything that we've just seen here, will that be of any concern regarding the boroughs versus ours?
I don't believe so.
Has April seen this?
She has not seen the entire ordinance, but I did send her, I thought that the definition of organized group was important enough to send her a copy of that. She asked some questions about it, but didn't have any feedback other than just asking some questions. And these other things are in line with the things that we're already doing in practice.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Council, the entire aspect of this is from two people you directly employ, the city clerk and the attorney, and they've done a review on this. If any of you want to join Mr. Cleworth as a sponsor, I'll let the city clerk know, and Madam Clerk, please put me down as a sponsor. And Mr. Cleworth, thank you for taking this up in the beginning. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, we'll go on to resolution 5179, a resolution amending the city schedule of fees and charges for services by adjusting the fees for the consumer price index. Margarita Bell, prior chief of staff, back to CFO.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Council. Resolution 5179 is one of the first steps that we're taking to address the mayor charge to the finance committee to increase non-tax revenue by 10% over 3 years. And what the finance committee did was they reviewed every fee schedule that we had. We looked at the last date that fee was changed. We kind of applied CPI from that point in time to date. And what you have before you is their recommendation for change. They did not change areas where they felt like it was more economic development based on some of the action of the council. They did not adjust like the permitting fees and the licensing fees. Since the council had recently changed emergency services fees and garbage collection fees, those were not adjusted as well. So that's what you have before you are their recommendation for changes in the fee schedule.
Are there any questions for Margarita? Ms. Therian?
I know that the court, when you want a certified copy, charges you $10 for the first one, and then $3 if you want a second copy. So if somebody wanted two certified copies, it would end up costing them $30. Have you ever thought about reduction if they wanted a second copy?
We did not review it from that standpoint. We just reviewed it from this is what we currently charge, this is what's on the schedule, and then we just applied the CPI accordingly. But it is something that could be considered or changed at this time.
Okay, would you consider a second copy to be cheaper since?
I think I'm looking to a city clerk, but I believe it's the same resources and work. So I would think it would be the same.
Which one are we talking about? I'm just talking about certified copy under administrative where it costs $15.
Truth be told, Ms. Therian, over decade I've been the city clerk, I have maybe done this one time for someone. It's so infrequently used, but we can make that adjustment.
The term is extremely rare.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, I'm brief. This, yes, sir. I there's some changes I'd like to see.
I didn't see anything that referred to, like, what Mr. Moore does over at the police department. Is that just completely out of this, Mike?
Yeah, with that stuff, we are, you know, we are limited by state law of what we can't, you know, we can't charge for the first 5 hours, and we have to, it's done differently.
So the video sharing and all that?
Right.
Okay.
And we are working on those costs with the legislature on trying to get reimbursements.
Okay. But the other one, the one that I think could be a great revenue source, but it would be, I think, the 60 or 70-161, the snow removal thing again. And then the other thing under Public Works is, you know, I had a friend that did garbage, and those needles that were hidden in the garbage was just devastating. What? And I think that charge should go up. But that's my opinion.
You can amend this on the floor.
Well, let me do that
Monday. And council, anyone can amend anything on this on the floor and have discussion and see if it goes. Mr. Clayworth.
Yeah, my question for you to follow up on that, the police documentation. I can understand if somebody makes a request for records that's in a court case of some sort. I don't understand when a national TV company says, well, we want footage for our TV show. Did the state law address that or anything and make a differentiation between the two?
They, unfortunately, the YouTubers and whatever else, you know, those folks, they know the law really well, so they will ask for it in small enough chunks where they know that we are not allowed to charge them. I mean, unless Tom knows something else, but that's my understanding.
The only other thing that I would add is a lot of these YouTuber media types are characterizing themselves as reporters or news outlets, and when they do that, there's a different treatment of those requesters. The other thing just that I would add is a lot of times we can't actually ask why they're using it. The only time that we can say kind of ask that question is if it's involves an ongoing litigation, they have to certify that it doesn't. So generally speaking, we don't know why they're asking for it.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Is there any technical way we could do a watermark that makes it unattractive on YouTube? It's still useful for court, but nothing that would look good on television? Is that a thing?
Look into it.
Because I can do that.
You want
I can
them
do
to
that
watermark me so I don't look attractive?
But it's something I can do on my own artwork, so it can't be copied. I'm just throwing that out.
Any other questions? Ms. Therrien.
It's just that we spent a lot of time in the legislative committee working on this, and I think we've got a couple of legislators that are going to work on a bill this year to help us deal with the costs of this and hopefully get more money, especially for our police department. So
it will be on our 2026 legislative priorities.
Yeah, that's what I was
And we're not the only ones who are looking at this either. It's statewide. It's becoming an issue. Time management. Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll go to ordinance 6318, an ordinance authorizing lease of Golden Heart Plaza to Festival Fairbanks. We have a fiscal note of $1 per year income. It's a new lease, 3-year term. Festival Fairbanks, my personal opinion, has done a very, very good job, not only with the plaza, with downtown, what they do and how they do it. And Julie Jones, I think, is a exceptional asset for the Fairbanks community. And so, there you go. Any questions? Mr. Ringstead.
Existing
existing lease?
Yes, the dates. That's not on the paper. But the Portland Lou is a portion of this that they'll be cleaning. Yeah, they'll be taking care of it. Any other discussion? Anyone who wants to join this, let the clerk know. Okay, item number 6, ordinance authorizing amending the Fairbanks General Code, section 2-119, order of business, citizens addressing the city council, section 2-120, rules of procedure. This has not been introduced. This is from me. I asked the city clerk to do this. It's the only thing that's changing is the amount of time that we allow for public comment. And if you've recognized, anytime there's something that's going to take more than 30 minutes, we give it to them anyway. We will take a vote on extending the time frame. And so what I thought was just do this now. It's up to an hour. We usually have between 3 and 6 people who testify under public comment. But my thought was just make this an hour, and once in a while, 2 to 3 times a year, it might be used. Any discussion? Mr. Ringstead.
So on the bottom of page 2, we're inserting something saying we can't postpone for something for more than 3 months after its introduction.
What's that now?
The bottom of page 2, top of page 3.
Except motion.
Says if we want to postpone something, we can't postpone it for more than 3 months.
Madam Clerk, would you please address that?
This was a discussion that came up between the attorney and myself and then with the mayor about there were some recent instances where the council postponed items and then continued to postpone the items. And by the time it came back around, sometimes those things can be forgotten. The details will be forgotten. Things have changed. Maybe even the makeup of the council has changed or the administration has changed. Robert's rules allows only a postponement to the next session or the next meeting. Our own rules were changed a number of years ago to allow us to the council to postpone beyond one meeting. But the mayor agreed that it was reasonable to limit that. It's not that the council can't then wait for an item and bring it back. You would just fail the present item and then bring it back, reintroduce it when it's ready to go. If you're waiting for more information or for staff to report or for a committee to report, something like that. Does the attorney have something to add?
You'll recall that on a couple of the ordinances that we looked at recently, they had literally been 1 year postponed. And it just procedurally gets a little tricky on our side because you have to have a different public comment period just given the lapse of time and any changes that have happened. And the clerk is correct, at least in those two examples, but you know, others come to mind. The material has changed so much that people are struggling to remember, what did we do a year ago? Was this introduced? Did somebody actually second this? And so just to tighten up our procedures a little bit, we thought if we can do it in 3 months, it might make things run a little smoother.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll move on. Ordinance 6320, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 2, Article 3, Boards and Commissions, to change the composition of the Board of Plumbers and Examiners to remove the requirement that the City Council must confirm the election of the chair. It's not been introduced by myself. And to the clerk, how many board chairs does the City Council confirm?
None. I think there might be one other board and commission that it has the same rule, but that I think it might be the Fact Finding Commission or our Health and Social Services Commission, neither of which are active, but they're still in the code. This is just kind of an oddity, and I think
it's cleanup on aisle 4.
Yeah, and this ordinance would also eliminate the requirement that it'll knock it down from it requiring 3 city residents to 2 city residents. And this came about from the actual board discussion And they relayed this to building official Christoph Folk, who spoke with me about it, and that's how it got on Mayor Pruse's desk, asked if it could be loosened up a little bit so that they could more easily recruit to fill positions.
Any discussion? Mr. Ringstead.
So how often do we actually redo an update or plumbing code?
About every other year with the update of the international.
When they do theirs, state does theirs, and we do ours, it sounds to me like we're just making work here.
Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ringstad, thank you for that. The Board of Plumber Examiners meets quarterly to also review the applicants for master plumbers. They maintain that exam, the contents of that exam, I believe, and then they also determine if the person is qualified and
doesn't the state do that
too? The city does it for master plumbers. Does the
state do it? Maybe they're both doing it?
You know, I'm not sure about that.
You know, the state has a master plumbing inspector based out of the state office next to us for the interior. Whether they do tests or not, I have no idea, or what it requires.
We've got to find out, see if we're being redundant here. And I don't know why we make do this twice, why we do it twice.
Mr. Marnie.
Do we have a hard time filling these positions for this committee?
No. Who here knows Mike Desmond? Probably mostly everyone. Mike Desmond was a chair of this for about 12, 15 years. And 2 years ago, he said to me, David, you know, I've known you since I was 5. We're sheep hunting partners, but I should turn this over to someone else. And so we never had anyone who had to be redone as the chair. And hence this comes about. So once in a while, you find an issue, and it's because Mike Desmond resigned as chair, and whether we should delve deep into what the state does or not is a whole different matter. But this is what we can do and what we can control. Now, if you want to continue to confirm the chair of the plumbers and of this, that's fine. Have him come in, say hello, tell you his background. Mr. Ringstead.
I have no great desire to worry about confirming the chair or not chair. I just look at it and say, do we need to do this at all? Do we need to even worry about our plumbing code and our certifications, or is it being done by somebody else that we're just being redundant?
Well,
question. In terms of confirming this, it's kind of
the thing about the city of Fairbanks.
Thing we need to do is that
the thing about the city of Fairbanks is we have building permits. Outside the city of Fairbanks, you do not have building permits.
But so, if our code's the same as the state's code, do we need to do it twice? We don't even know.
Okay, say someone builds a house or a structure outside the city limits. What do they need?
I have no idea.
They need basically an elevator, if they have that, and they have to have the fire code for fire sprinkler system. They're not having a state inspector come over. Well, in the city, we have the building department that comes over. They give a certificate of occupancy. So,
is there a charge for that?
Oh, yeah. That's building permits.
But do we need a commission to do that?
Yeah. So, whether the state does,
do the licensing of them.
But that's just my own knowledge, not being a contractor, but just being an administrator. Yeah.
Councilmember Ringstad, I wrote your question down. It's a good question about whether there's some duplication here that we could eliminate. I do know that because there is a license involved and it's somebody's livelihood, we have to have a procedural due process for if it's denied. And I think that that's why they're setting up a board, so that if we deny, the board would approve it, but if it's denied, there's like a procedural process and an appeal process. So somebody could say, hey, you know, I applied for this, you shouldn't have denied it, and it can kind of run the gamut on that. But I did write your question out. It's a good question as far as, has anybody looked at this and are we duplicating stuff at the state level? I think it's a great question.
Mr. Morning.
To close that, would we be able to get what charge comes with this inspection? Is that's probably not on our list already. I didn't notice it.
Well, a plumbing inspection fee is probably based on the amount of the estimated cost. So it's not one fee fits all. It's what, yeah, it's on the amount of the improvements that they're estimating from a contractor, and that's where the fee comes from, the building permit. Yeah. Mark,
the master plumber is on here, though.
I'll have Christoph give you a call to explain it to you.
Yeah, no problem, because wouldn't it be like the deputy fire marshal or the fire marshal doing that same kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that per hour, or?
The answer is coming to the dais.
I know nothing about plumbing, but I do know a little bit about fire marshals.
Don't ask me anything about plumbing. I know zero.
What is the fee? Is it by?
So they are a little bit confusing sometimes. If it's a new construction, that fire marshal fee is built into that new construction from the building permit side. If they're doing just a sprinkler renovation or moving some alarm panels, not that we know anything about alarm panels, there's a per hour charge. So it depends on why the fire marshal is in the building. Will depend on where the charge and how the charge is applied. Our fees are based on a per hour charge, except for the daycare part, but the building department version of that is based off of total cost of the project, if I remember their code correctly. So it's a little bit of both and kind of different at the same time.
Thank you.
Mr. Sanders.
Yeah, so my understanding, this ordinance is about the master plumber license. It's not about the building permits, and the master plumber license is on the other ordinance that we, or other resolution that we have, 5179. It's $200 for their license.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep, no problem.
Any other questions before I move on? Seeing none, up next is ordinance 6321, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 2, Article 5, Division 3, budget of enacting Section 2-659, Capital Projects Fund Part Preparation and presentation to City Council requiring a minimum fund balance for the City Capital Projects Fund. It has not been introduced, but Mayor Cleworth is the author of it. Mr. Cleworth. Councilman Cleworth. Mayor Cleworth. Jerry.
Yeah, that was a while ago. Thank you. We had a good finance committee meeting the last go around, and we talked extensively about the capital fund. Over the last year, we've also talked about establishing some kind of a minimum in that fund to protect us for emergencies. And my goal was always about $5 million. Margarita's was $3 million. Hence, you have $4 million here. And that was, a good compromise on that. To me, this is very, very important. I've used the story about the snow blowers in the past, but in this last week, we saw a tragedy in Texas that I don't think anybody ever would have imagined seeing. If we had a rainfall like that, too, even though we have a good flood control system, it's not a perfect one. And we could be in the same situation again where things go haywire very quickly. You need to have that kind of a protection and plan in the future so that people don't sit there and point fingers. Why didn't you guys plan down the line here and have some kind of a bottom line there? This does gives us latitude to dip into it. And then within 12 calendar months, which will put you into a new budget cycle, you have to replace it. So whoever's the mayor would have to bring that back up to snuff if we've dipped into that. And I don't imagine that happening. That would be pretty bizarre to do that, but it's wise to have some kind of a safety net there, and this is what we came up with and have talked about for a long time. Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle.
As written in the Finance Committee reading report, we did have a good conversation about this, and I think it was really a strong topic. My point was to say maybe this should be a policy as opposed to an ordinance. And that was kicked around a fair bit. So to Jerry's credit, he brought it as the ordinance to have this conversation because I think it's worth having for sure, as opposed to just deciding it in finance. So I just wanted to share that prospect that this holds us to a real standard to force us to pull from general, fill in the finance or the capital, no matter what. I think we still need to be smart. We are smart people. I think we care about this kind of thing. But I just wanted to bring to the point that policy would be also a driver, not an insistence. So I just wanted to throw that out. That was a conversation.
Mr. Marty.
Why did Margarita just vote free then?
Why did I recommend $3 million? Yeah. Looking at the expenditures over 10 years, as well as I was also looking at the balance, how much we need from unassigned each year. And so taking those numbers into mind and looking at the average of it, it was always close to $3 million. I felt that $3 million would be a good number.
Overall, this puts in place a fiscal management policy. Now, what at any time the council, after two readings, can take the capital budget in a different direction in the future. But what this does is it sets a standard of where we want to be in the future. And then when the city council, upon their authorization of expending money, it wants a rapid refill of this amount. All budgets are basically the city council's no matter what. So you can have whatever number you want, but I believe this number is good. And then it must be very well explained to you, the city council, why we're deviating from the balance on this. And again, all expenditures are up to the council. Ms. Sprinkle.
So in your description of that, you just used the word fiscal policy, mm-hmm. which I agree with. I think this is a really great guardrail to have. I really worry about putting it in an ordinance because who knows what will happen. It just binds us down the road for... Anyway, I'd rather see it as policy, where I'm going.
Right now, I believe our unassigned balance is a little bit over $6 million. Margarita?
With the last budget amendment, it's at $5.1 million.
$5.1, okay. Mr. Ringstead?
I think the difference between the policy and the... And an ordinance is mostly emphasis as opposed to legal. We can put whatever we want in this code and we can't tell the council 12 years from now what they're gonna spend their money on. We have no authority to do that. So this really is a policy statement. You put it in ordinance a little bit stronger. And I think what it's doing is putting an emphasis on we have to maintain a capital budget over time. And we have to be prepared to do what you have to do when it happens. Whether it's $4 million or $5 million or $3 million, I think that to me we've kind of underfunded for quite a number of years, our capital thoughts. We need, Jerry's pointed out several times, when was the last time we did a big road project? You need to have some money and pay attention. I think this forces councils, future councils, to look at and consider capital budget. Legally, it doesn't bind them to do anything.
And I'll tell you, this time of year, with Bob Prishtas sitting there, we're always coming back to the capital budget for a differentiation of what was the cost that we thought it would be and then an amendment or an addition to what we're doing. Ms. Tidwell.
This attachment that's on the second page, I mean, is that not just a policy recommendation that we voted on back in 2024 to keep it at 5 million? So the difference is we're changing it to an actual ordinance and we're lowering it to 4 million.
That is correct, yes.
So if we didn't do anything at all, we still have this recommendation for 5.
That is true, yes.
Go ahead, Mr. Chard.
Sorry, redone. I wasn't trying to step on you.
Yeah,
I apologize.
Yeah.
Just to Councilmember Ringstead's comment, when I reviewed this, the only legal concern that I had was if you had two sections of the code that might someday be in conflict, you've got a general fund unassigned balance that's in code, and when if this passes, you would have a capital fund balance, minimum balance in code. I had asked Margarita, and you know, in thinking through this, what happens if those two sections of code are in conflict? You don't have enough money to maintain your general fund unassigned balance and your capital fund unassigned balance. And what I have heard has been, well, one, you know, that might not happen. Two, if it does happen, the council can always put an ordinance forward to change that. And I suppose that's fine. Just as long as you guys are all like open-eyed, clear-eyed about if that should happen, the council, you know, would have to pretty quickly correct a course of action. And maybe Margarita could speak about the potentiality of that happening a little bit more, but I'm comfortable with, yeah, what Councilmember Cleworth and the mayor have said, that if something comes up, you know, code is not written in stone. It's not the 11th commandment. So, we can change it.
Any other questions? Mr. Clearworth.
We mandate that we have $10 million in the general fund. And we really have to have that. A lot of that's for cash flow to get us through the years, when we're waiting for property taxes to kick in. I remember a time in the council when we struggled to make payroll to payroll. We haven't had that problem in decades, because we have a general fund balance there that covers the cash flow. Even at one time, we went out for tax anticipation notes, just in case we got ourselves in real jam, we would borrow money from a bank. No, and we've stopped all that absurdity by having some threshold that we should have a target for. This is very minimal. $4 million, I'm not totally comfortable with, but it'll work. I can't recall, and Margarita can correct me, but I can't recall in the last 10 years or so ever going below $5 million. Did we ever do that? You can remember?
Yes, we did have a budget year where it dipped below the $5 million mark. It was close to $3 million at one point in time. So we did have a time when we budgeted at that level.
We slowly built that back up again. So
that is correct.
You know, this comes in at a very interesting time, because you're going to see a capital project with over $3 million for the heating system of this facility that they've been looking at for the last 8 to 10 years. So, welcome to Real World 101. Any other questions before we move on? Seeing none, next up is the Riverscape project. Mr. Ringstead, you asked for this. We had a discussion yesterday. Give you an update on that. You'll see the Riverscape project in the budgetary format of fiscal year 2026. I thought it best to do it that way, when you can see everything with that project that is also with other competing areas for the capital. With that, you will see from a better report from the landscape engineer that we bought. You'll recognize how this project came about from the very beginning to the very end. You'll see how the probably the best historian in town with direction did her research. And that will be most likely in November to you, for you to look at it as a whole, as with other capital projects. So you can put that into the budgetary factor. Bringing it out to you the last time with all these items, we have to make it more simplistic for you so you can make a determination all at once. Then when I think about it, in a budgetary standpoint, if we did anything, it would have been July, two readings, 30 days putting it out for a contract, and putting out a contract in September in construction, you're probably going to get the highest bids. Putting a contract out in January or February, you'll get probably lower bids. Just my thought. That's where that's at. Any discussion on that? Ms. Therrien?
Well, November, December is so full. I would suggest, since this is a big project, that maybe we have that discussion in late September, early October, so we're not just, so we could at least look at that ahead of the budget so we can get all our questions answered. Just
a
suggestion. Yeah, I just think I'd like to spend a little bit more time on it and not have to be doing an hour and a half every day for 4 weeks in November.
Why not?
Yeah.
That's what we do.
No, we're going to be doing the hour and a half every week in November anyways. I'd like to see this earlier.
Then. You're also with that in, anyway. Is there any other, I'll bring something else into for you under my comments. Any other discussion on this? Okay. Margarita, Finance Committee report.
Okay. The Finance Committee met on Thursday, June the 26th. There were a couple of topics that you addressed today that we discussed, the capital fund minimum balance and the CPI adjustments. And just to mention on that minimum balance, what would happen is if we get close to a minimum balance with the general fund, we would have to start cutting. When we go through the budgeting process, if we're hitting that 10 million mark or go below, then that's when we start looking at our expenditures and adjusting accordingly. So those minimum balances are to keep you from, to ensure that our spending are with a certain level so that we are able to keep that balance in place so that we do have the funds available to meet whatever our payroll needs and any other costs. So that's what would happen. As we get closer to that minimum balance, we'll start looking at expenditures and adjusting accordingly. In regards to the May 31st reports that we reviewed at the Finance Committee, we had a general fund balance sheet, fund balance of $14.4 million. Our cash flow at the time was $26.6 million. We had revenues of $18.6 million and expenditures at $18.4 million. We are scheduled to meet again on Thursday, July 24th at 7 a.m. And at that time, we'll start looking at long-range financial planning, and we may be looking at target-based budgeting information at that time. And that's all I have.
Any questions for Margarita? Okay, let's go back to Margarita under the mayor's comments. And you said you brought up target-based budgeting. What is our schedule with the city council here?
Actually, I have already started the budgeting process. We will start with the mayor next week. We're taking a look at revenue projections to date, as well as expenditures costs, so that we can start looking at a baseline. And the way target-based budgeting works is it focuses, I guess a way to put it is you're focusing on what's new, what's added to the budget versus spending the time and on what we consider to be your basic core cost. So your efforts are more on what's new. And I will work with the department heads tomorrow to do a session on what it would look like for them. The process is basically the same. The only difference is we will be coming to you in August with the mayor's proposed core cost for the department heads because they need that number to break out their costs by line items in the budget. It starts off with their current personnel cost with no additions because anything that's additional is presented in a supplemental form, and that is where you would spend most of your time with each department on what additional cost they're asking for, as well as any additional changes in their personnel staffing. So your first round is going to be in August, and that's just to look at the core amount that you're budgeting for each department so that they can work on their side of it. You'll see the same documentations as in the past where they've broken out the different their core cost into different line items in the budget, but your time will be spent on what's new, what they're presenting new. And we'll bring more information in August once we finish, but we're actually starting next week.
Mr. Prisash, will you please come up to the dais? Bob, how many construction projects are you currently involved in?
I guess 12 right now.
Just 12 at the moment. Council, in the winter and spring, they get ready for the construction season. And so we have something that's come up that Mr. Pristash is going to bring you through that might sound a little bit complicated. That's why he's here. Mr. Pristash, would you please present?
Specifically, the Cowles construction project, the one that the DOT is administering right now, we designed. It's a city road and city maintenance responsibility. When I was looking at the, it's getting very close to completion, and typically when the curbs are going down, that's when the road is coming to an end because all the underground work was done. You know, the pavement structure below the asphalt has all been built, and you can actually see how the project matches the edges. You know, that's typically where these things go wrong, where everything is fine internally unless somebody's made a blunder, but where it matches the edges is where the problems begin sometimes. So I noticed that the other day when I was looking at Cowles, I'm looking south, you have Shoppers Forum on your right side, the west side, and you got the street, you know, to your left, and I could see the back of sidewalk and the parking lot have a change in grade that's a little greater than I would like to see. So I think a good treatment for that would be to add a vegetative strip between the back of sidewalk and the parking lot. Very similar to what we did on Cushman Street here. As you go north on Cushman, on your left-hand side, you have Saddler's parking lot, and you can see that strip of Cotoni Asters, you know, where the coffee shop is. That's a 4-foot strip that's vegetative, but it takes care of that, the roly-poliness of his parking lot with a perfectly straight back of sidewalk. So I'm suggesting the same thing over on Cowles. So to get that done, it requires, of course, Gavora to agree. And we had Dan Gavora out there the other day with Nick and the mayor. But Matt, who's in Washington, is not crazy about the idea. But this weekend,
Matt's the brother who is the he operates the real estate side of Gavora.
Right. Their family is going to meet this weekend, and they're going to talk about it more. So that's the first thing. Most when you can see it, the Gavoras are for it, but they have to convince this the other one who's out of state. And we also have to have, because it's a DOT federal money, we have to have a maintenance agreement where the city would take over maintenance of the vegetative strip. However, just like we did at the Morris Thompson Center where The DOT doesn't consider the Morris Thompson agency as suitable to enter a maintenance agreement, but the city is. So the city agrees to the maintenance, and then the city has an agreement with Morris Thompson Center. You see, it's a pass-through agreement, very similar to what we did to the Morris Thompson Center. So I have those documents here too. So that would mean council approval. Council would approve the maintenance agreement, and then Gavora would take over the maintenance that we're agreeing to with the DOT.
So basically, we're in the interior position. We're looking at a change order that the state of Alaska would pay for, and then eventually, if agreed to, the Gavora Inc. would maintain. And so, right. Mr. Ringstead.
Maintain it. Do we pay them to maintain it?
No. No.
So all you're talking about is a 4-foot strip going from Airport Road south to
the edge of their property.
Or whatever
Kennecott.
Yeah.
Ms. Tidwell, then Ms. Sprinkle.
What does maintaining that 4-foot strip actually entail?
Minimum. Some weeding. You know, that one is 10 years old, and really, it's they're pretty hardy. The reason I thought they may want to do it because we have a landscape ordinance, and if they do something to their parking lot, that triggers that landscape ordinance. This would satisfy that part of the ordinance for that, so that's a benefit to them.
And doing something includes repaving. Yeah. And right. If you look at their parking lot, it's going to be needing some paving here in the future.
Right.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Bob, I like the idea. $0 to us.
Yes.
Is it from the corner all the way to the end of the retail space? How long is this?
Yeah, pretty much. There's a, it's really south of Airport Way down to Kennecott.
Okay.
That's their whole lot. But yeah. There's a frontage road there, so you got to subtract that. You know, this really does, it treats the stormwater off the parking lot before it gets into the system.
It's a win-win.
It seems that way, but.
Okay, thank you.
I know there's a lot of moving parts. We got to draw an easement, which we've got done. We've got a quote from the contractor. The DOT has to agree to it, you know. But if the council doesn't agree to it, we're dead. Yeah.
So, to the attorney, can we do this by resolution?
So there's an easement.
Maintenance agreement.
Yeah, I believe so. Just for clarification, the 4-foot strip that you're talking about is currently city-owned property. It's in the right of way. We're making an easement for them, or is it stabilized?
No. The vegetative strip would be 1 foot on city property and 3 feet on the Gavora property. We'd have a 3-foot easement.
I'd have to look at the easement.
Okay.
Make sure.
And whether this is going to happen or not, we don't know, but we're showing it to you now. We have a family with internal items being discussed. The real estate side is saying, now let me get this straight. I'm losing real estate and I'm maintaining real estate. And the overall is saying, yes, you are. And it's better for us in the long run. So we will see what they determine. Mr. Cleworth.
Bob, on the project over there with Sadler's, kind of a similar arrangement?
It was, but it was, you know, it was state money, and it was the city administration of the construction and design, so there were many hoops to jump through with the DOT.
Who maintains that strip, say, on Cushman Street there?
Right now, Festival Fairbanks.
In front of Sadler's?
Mm-hmm. And Sadler's, Sadler's wasn't doing it as fast as I thought, so I asked Julie if she would do it, and she did it for like $500 or something. I mean, there's hardly any maintenance to it. There was pulling some weeds and some suckers.
Like $500 a year, you mean?
Not even a year, the one-time payment for over 10 years. I mean, it's minimal maintenance because of the mulch that we're using and the trees that were, those goteniasters are, they're perfect for that kind of application.
Is the agreement you signed then with Gavora, there's no end time to it, it's in perpetuity?
Right. It's correct.
Okay. No, I like that word. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob. That's my report going to the city council member. We're going to start out with Mr. Ringsted. Mr. Ringsted, how you feeling there, sir?
Better. You know, a couple of years ago, I started when I sort of after I got on the council, I said, you know, we need to, people don't feel safe in downtown Fairbanks. We need to clean it up. Strangely enough, I had a little opposition to that, but not a lot. I think we've made progress on it, but as you probably may have heard, that subject became more upfront and personal a week ago. I think we're going to have some policy discussion on this when I have somebody trying to beat the crap out of my daughter at 8:15 on a Sunday morning in my driveway. I managed to step in between them, and I wound up in the ER, as opposed to her. But, you know, we have let this go way too long and way too far. I have two teenage daughters that have told me they want to go out and practice shooting. I have a daughter that's pricing guns. Now, this is what's happening. It's out there, whether we want to admit it or not. It's out there, it's getting worse. You know, bad enough. Sunday night, this happened 8 days ago. Sunday night, we had another one in our driveway, walking around my daughter's car, 20 feet from the garage. These people are screwed up. They don't know what they're doing. They have no qualms about doing anything. So we're going to have some policy discussion. I don't think it's a solution that we as City of Fairbanks and City Council can fix on our own. We're going to need help from the Department of Law and Department of Corrections, probably the legislature. But as long as we have this kind of activity, people aren't going to want to come and invest their money. And why do you want to move to Fairbanks if this is the way our people are being protected? You know, I kind of look at local government and probably other levels of government, our primary, if not the primary purpose, one of our primary purposes is to protect our people. And our police department, our fire department, you know, that's how we do it. The question is whether or not we do it. And we have areas that we are just not doing it. We collectively, a lot of the responsibilities in the state. But I think it's time that we're going to have to start talking about that. So I intend to do that. And we're gonna go forward. We have a meeting shortly with the DA's office. And I think we need to start saying we don't want to have our teenage girls packing guns. Where that's not our community. We don't want to do that. They shouldn't feel like they have to do that.
Mr. Ringsted, coming through the event, were you satisfied with the response time from the City of Fairbanks Police Department?
Yes, I was going to bring that up. I was going to wait till next Monday night's meeting. They did great. They did great. They have a role to play in where we go in the future and how we deal with it, but we need to start dealing with it. So.
And the person involved in this alleged assault
was a
quite repeat offender.
I think over 60 cases.
Joe counted 40.
40. There's a bunch. It goes back to 1998 in four different cities in Alaska. 50 years old, and he goes in two or three times a year, and he doesn't care. He was so screwed up, he didn't feel any pain at all.
When your daughter put her foot in a specific area, he felt nothing.
He felt nothing.
Okay.
He felt nothing.
Anything else on
any guy I know would have been laying on the ground for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
He didn't even feel it.
Any other report, Mr. Ringsted?
No, we will continue to work that. More information to come.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, that's hard to follow.
Sorry.
Well, everyone's got to follow it, sir.
Not only is he a councilman, but he's a senior, and that's what gets my crawl. Mm-hmm. I'm with John all the way. We've skirted this conversation for years, and it's time to put our foot down.
Ms. Tidwell. Mr. Clayworth.
Well, maybe a little better news. talking to Officer Elzey the other day, and he said, we've only had one arrest since I've been there in the park. And he said, things are going extremely well between himself and Officer James. I just thought that was a good report. I'm kind of amazed. The way they handle it is more parental than it is police officer, and it works when you start to know the people, where they live, what their backgrounds are. When I see a new face downtown, and I see him every day, just a person we haven't seen before, acting erratically or whatever, they find out where they live, they find out the history of the people, and it works pretty well. When you know the background of it, you can handle a situation a lot better than just coming in cold. And you get to know all the people, and they come and go with time. So I thought that was good news. Thank you.
Ms. Therrien.
Yes, I was hoping that at some time during a work session, we could look at the risk fund, how it's presented in the budget, just so that we have a better understanding of how the risk fund works and whether or not we need to maybe make some changes so that it's presented to us at budget time and how we can look at it a little bit better, if we could do that.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I was wondering if we had any update on the Portland Loo, and before you give an update, do we remove the porta potties from the Golden Heart Plaza because of that? That's a question I have.
Jeremiah, please come on up with Hatton on head.
Can he answer both of those things? Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Thank you.
Good morning, Council. Yes, the porta potties have been removed. We removed them, I believe, last week, early in the week. Great. And we were told that the porta potty was, the loo was ready to go. There has been some vandalism, of course, to it that we've been able to get past. Lock was, the way that it locks when it shut, somebody locked it near, then somebody pried the door open and ruined the lock or messed it up right temporarily. Julie Jones was able to get it fixed where it was functioning again. We're looking at possibly changing the lock to where it can't accidentally be locked when somebody shuts it. I thought that was kind of weird and could cause problems. So we're going to look at changing the lock style and what we can do there. There was a shovel jammed into the toilet that got removed. Don't believe there was much damage done there, but that's just what I'd seen in the email from Julie as to condition of the loo on Monday. But other words, it seems to be going over pretty good. We've had a lot of people comment on it that they like that it's there. They do like it. It's just, some individuals have issues with it. So there was a camera. The police have been asked to see if they can identify who did the damage to the lock and all the other damages last weekend. So just kind of waiting to see what's up with that.
Okay, thanks.
All right, maybe we should put their photos on the loo. Have you seen this person?
Jeremiah, just as you're figuring out this lock situation and the cameras and FPD, and I'll ask Chief Doopy this as well, but keep me in the loop on that if you would, please.
Okay, 10-4.
Anything else, Ms. Sprinkle?
Nope.
I guess in conclusion, I'm going to say, Mr. Ringstead, whenever I hear the Carl Douglas song from the 70s, Kung Fu Fighting, I'll think of you, sir. And, being the mayor of Fairbanks is unique because I was informed of this aspect within minutes, and I was over at his house before he got back from the emergency room. And did you get your stitches out of your ear yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
The room you can't take pictures.
Okay. And I would make my proof. I'd make my daily phone calls to see how his black eye was doing, and it looks
almost gone.
Gone. You're a quick healer, sir. Good to see.
I am a quick healer. I'm fortunate.
Mr. Clearworth, would you please bring us into executive session?
Go ahead and move that go in executive session, discuss one item, Chapman versus City of Fairbanks.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, we'll reconvene in 5 minutes at 8:20. Thank you, everyone.
City Council met in executive session, discussed one item, Chapman versus City of Fairbanks, no formal action taken.
Okay, we're back in regular session. Our next regular work session is Tuesday, July 22nd, 2025 at 7 a.m. Adjournment, motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Seeing no opposition, we're adjourned.